We know we are learning Hilchos Shabbos, and I think it's important for us to have an understanding of how critical the laws of Shabbos are in the context of all of the corpus of Halacha. So we begin with Rashi. Rashi in Parshas Re'eh tells us very famously from the Sifri. The Sifri is of the opinion that Halamadasa, it's learned from a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, Shekola Obed Avodazara, Harehu Sar Mikol Haderech, Shenistabu Yisroh. If somebody serves Avodah Zarah, put Shabbos on the side for a moment, but if somebody serves Avodah Zarah, someone's involved in idol worship, Harehu Sar Mikol Haderech Shenistabu Yisroh, they are like leaving the path, Mikan Amru, and from here we learn Kalamodev Avodah Zarah Kikofer Bechol Hatera Kula. Somebody who's involved in Avodah Zarah is as if they deny the authenticity of the entirety of Torah. So Avodah Zarah, idol worship, seems to be in a league, in a category of its own. And the same thing is found in the Gemara Masechet Torah, where the Gemara says, Kalamodev Avodah Kochavim Kikofer Bechol Hatera Kula. Somebody who is involved in idol worship is as if they have denied the entirety of Torah. We then go further, and we go to a Gemara Masechet Chulin, where the Gemara tells us that Mumer la'avodas kochavim ha'vikumumer l'chol ha'tarah kula. So the Gemara there is talking about an interesting halacha. Why is it in Masechet Chulin? The Gemara Masechet Chulin is talking about who is able to be a shochet, who is able to slaughter an animal, and who maybe is disqualified from doing so. So the Gemara there goes into a whole discussion, who is believed to do certain things, who is not believed to do certain things. And the Gemara there says, what if a person is a mumer, which means somebody is not careful about a particular area of halacha. So let's say, for example, a number of years ago, there was a restaurant where somebody was caught that he was not following the laws of kashrus, and this individual was selling non-kosher meat, non-kosher chicken, whatever it may have been. It was an undeniable fact that he was doing something wrong, and he owned up to it. He didn't even deny it at all himself. So now, would I be able to trust that person moving forward in areas of kashrus? The answer to that is no. They've lost their cheskas kashrus. They've lost their ability to be trusted in that area. Now, does that mean I'm also not going to go into a business deal with them? Let's say that person is also a phenomenal businessman. Would I trust that person to go into a business deal? Maybe. It just happens to be when it comes to the laws of kashrus that they have lost their ability to be trusted. How do they regain that? That's a good question. They have to prove it to us that they're going to be able to be trusted once again. But the Gemara there is talking about somebody who loses their status as a card-carrying member of the general belief that we would give them or ability to rely on this person for certain things. How do they lose that ability? So the Gemara there tells us that if you are a mumer, la'avodas kochavim, somebody who violates the isra of avodah zarah, is as if you are a mumer l'chol ha'torah kula. Then you've lost your status in terms of everything. It's not just limited to idol worship. That is considered to be tantamount to somebody who doesn't believe in anything at all. So that's what the Gemara says there. And based on that, we have some very, very serious consequences for somebody who is involved in idol worship. Now you'll say, maybe that's limited to Avodah Zarah. As we know, Avodah Zarah is one of the cardinal three sins. It's one of the most important, it's one of the most critical. But yet, we find when it comes to the pasuk with regard to describing Shabbos, that we have the very same concept, the very same idea. Yeah? Yeah, that is a contrast, correct.
So, there's no.
So, for example, somebody who serves Avodah Zarah would not be able to count toward a minyan. Somebody who serves Avodah Zarah may not be trusted for other things as well, even though there's no reason per se not to be able to rely upon that for other things. But the Gemara assumes that this takes on an elevated status. Because Avodah Zarah has such a prominent place in our religion, therefore we assume that if somebody violates that halacha, they are considered to be in a gross violation of the halacha itself. So now we move on to how that compares to Shabbos. So the Gemara there says in Masechet Shabbos that the same way with regard to Avodah Zarah we say Mumer la'avodas kochamim is Mumer l'chol ha'torah kula, somebody who's not careful about idol worship is as if they have violated all the halachas in the Torah, so too says the Gemara, Mumer l'Shabbos is Mumer l'chol ha'torah kula. If somebody is not careful about Shabbos, they would take on the same status. Now, this is a very unusual, practically unusual halakha, because most people today, I don't know most people, but many of the people today who don't observe Shabbos, it's because they simply do not know. Not because they were well informed and made a decision not to, but rather because they simply don't know the laws of Shabbos. So this would not apply to anyone who grew up in that kind of situation and simply has no awareness. I want to ask my father as well, let's say we live in Eretz Yisrael. How can you say that a secular Israeli Jew who sees that the buses don't run on Shabbos, who sees that Shabbos is in the newspaper every day of the week, who sees that there are discussions in the Knesset every day about Shabbos, how can they say, how can they claim that they don't know about Shabbos? That would be a ridiculous claim. Would we say that they automatically have the status of a mumer l'chal on Shabbos? And the answer to that is no. How can it be no? What do you mean? Even though they weren't brought up in the educational system, and maybe they weren't taught on the halacha, but they're well aware of the fact that Shabbos is something, and something that they're not a part of. So how can they not be included in this statement of the Gemara that mumer l'chal ha'torah kula, if one is in violation of Shabbos, it's as if they violated everything? The answer to that is, my father often says, that if you look from the perspective of a secular Israeli in Israel, they don't look at their lives as being any less than the Orthodox. They just say the Orthodox are the extremists. They're crazy. I'm living the normal life. So if you were brought up to believe that somebody else is extreme and you're living the norm, then you cannot claim that that person is a mumer of halat harakula. As far as they're concerned, they're not doing anything wrong. As far as they're concerned, you're doing something that's outrageous. You're doing something that sounds unreasonable. And therefore, we would say that this status of a mumer l'shabbos as mumer l'chalat harakula is only reserved to someone who grew up in the system, who knows better, who does know the halachas of Shabbos, who understands very well what it is that they're doing, and chooses to violate anyway. That person will now be considered as if it's tantamount to violating many of the laws of the Torah as well. What is the reason for that? Why do we assume that somebody who violates Shabbos and somebody who violates the Isra of Avodah Zarah is considered to be like an elevated status, like a mumer l'chal ha'torah kula? What is that all about? The Mishnah Berurah explains in his introduction to Hilchos Shabbos that it goes as follows. There's a well-known tradition that we have the same amount of mitzvot as the body parts that we have as well. There are ramach evarim, 248 evarim. Problem is that women have a different number of evarim. The Gemara assumes women have 252. Anybody in anatomy should know that there is some kind of difference in numbers, so that's a good question. When we daven, actually, you probably noticed, when we daven in shul, and we make a mishaber for cholim. So some shuls make separate for men and separate for women. It's not because we're so religious and we have to separate the men and women. When we're davening, we should be able to daven for both. The reason why is because there's a different nusa. When you're davening for a male, you say, l'ramate v'arav u'shesagidot, that he should have a refua to his 248 limbs. When we daven for a female, because we assume that there's a different number of limbs that a woman has than the man, therefore we say, l'chale v'arav u'chal gidot, not the same ramate v'arav as a man would have. Anyway, leaving that aside, we generally assume that there are 248 limbs in a person's body. Again, women may be different, may not be. Anyway, but leave that aside for now. And connected to that, the Gemara has an assumption that there are 248 mitzvot asei as well, 248 positive commandments as well. Now, it says the Mishnah Berurah. If somebody, Rachmana Litzlan, loses an arm, somebody loses a finger, somebody loses a toe, what would you say? It's a tragedy. It's a terrible thing. It's a disability. It's something that will obviously change the course of their lives. But they're still able to live. It's going to change their life, but not in such a dramatic way that they won't be able to continue on living. They will be able to. Let's say somebody goes through even a worse loss. They lose both legs. They lose both arms. Even so, it's horrific. It's horrible. It's a terrible disability. It's a terrible inconvenience for them. It's something that's going to be devastating to them emotionally and physically. However, they're still able to live. There still is a perspective of having a healthy life moving forward. However, says the Mishnah Berurah, what happens if a person doesn't have a heart? Or a person doesn't have a brain? What would happen then? Somebody who suffers a brain injury is not able to live most of the time. Yesterday I was on the plane. I was coming back from San Diego. There's a woman about 2 hours before we landed who was sitting right across the aisle from me, and she started saying that she has a heart arrhythmia and she feels like she's about to have a heart attack. And I kept asking, is there a medical professional on the plane? Is there anybody here to help? And I said, forget medical professional. Nobody's coming forward. Why can't anybody else on the plane help her? I don't know. So anyway, I started talking to her, and I asked, is there anything we can do for you? And anyway, we laid her down on the floor. It took like an hour and a half for this to get settled. Baruch Hashem, she looked at the end like she was fine. She was going to the hospital anyway, just to be checked out. But when you have, it just reminded me of exactly what I was preparing on the plane. And I told her, exclusive the shiur that I'm about to give tomorrow, you should know that you're well. She kept saying, you're Jewish, can you pray for me? Can you pray for me? I said, I am praying for you. This is what I was doing. I was preparing a shiur. So anyway, so she should have her refuah shleima. I think she seemed to be doing much better. But that's what the Mishnah Berurah said. This is, I'm not making this up, exactly what I was preparing yesterday as this was unfolding, which is pretty amazing. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that when you have somebody who loses function in their heart, or somebody who loses function in their brain, that can be lethal. That can be something that's fatal. And therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, Shabbos and Avodah Zarah are considered to be vital organs. And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah explains that if you don't have those, it's ki'ilu mumar l'chalat zarah kula. Says if you don't have anything. Why? Because that's considered to be like you lost your heart or you lost the brain. Let me read the words in the Mishnah Berurah. The pasuk says, Zachar es yom ha-shabbos l'katsho, ki sheish es yom ha-masa ha-shem es ha-shamayim es ha-aret. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Horo lanu ha-kasuk. What is the Torah teaching us when it says that we should remember Shabbos, and Shabbos reminds us of the fact that sheish es yom ha-masa ha-shem es ha-shamayim es ha-aret? Horo lanu ha-kasuk, she'inin ha-shabbos du. What is the source? What is the reason why we observe Shabbos? Ha-emuna. It's all about emuna. Leida sheha olam hu mechudash. It's to remind us that the world continues to exist because God, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that there should be chidish olam. V'kiven shabar hakol, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, therefore, Adonai hakol. Therefore, he is the master over everything that he created. If I create something, I have a patent on it, it belongs to me, nobody else has rights to steal it from me. It's my property. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the borei olam, he is the creator of the world, and therefore that means that he's also the master of the universe. Va'anachru avadav, and we are his servant. U'mechuyavim lasos ritzono la'avda b'chol gusenu v'nishmosenu u'maneinu ki akol shalom. Says the Mishnah Berurah, because we are created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and since he created all of us, therefore he owns everything that this world encompasses. Therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, we now remind ourselves that we have an obligation to serve him. So the Mishnah Berurah gives a context here. It's not just that Shabbos out of nowhere became this unbelievable mitzvah that is for some reason blown out of proportion. The Mishnah Berurah explains why. Because Shabbos itself, as we know, one of the cardinal sins is Avodah Zarah. Somebody who doesn't believe in God, what does it mean that you're going to serve him in other ways? What does it mean you're going to go to shul and daven if you don't believe in God? That really doesn't make sense. It's a contradiction in terms. What does it mean you're going to observe Shabbos if you don't believe in God? Of course, the foundation has to be that we believe in God. Once we get past that, then we move forward. Now, says the Mishnah Berurah, let's talk about Shabbos for a moment. Shabbos is supposed to be a reminder, ki sheish es yom ha-masa ha-shem es ha-shamayim es ha-aretz. So what? Many mitzvahs are supposed to remind us of different things. When we sit in the sukkah, it's supposed to remind us of the fact that we came out of Mitzrayim. Does that mean sukkah now has an elevated status? No. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Shabbos, since it's supposed to remind us of Riyah Shamayim Va'aretz, think about it. What is that supposed to make you think about? That's supposed to make you take a step back and remind yourself, oh, God created the world, that means I'm a part of his creation. If I'm a part of his creation, it means I belong to him. It means everything I have is really in his possession. That in turn also means that I have to believe in him, that I have to serve him, that I have to listen to what he wants from me. So therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, this is almost an offshoot of the whole idea of emunah, the whole idea of believing in God. Shabbos is a natural outgrowth of that mitzvah as well. And therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, this is why the dafka, when it comes to these two mitzvahs, both of Avodah Zarah, as well as Shmirah Shabbos, the observance of Shabbos, and being careful not to serve idols, in those two cases in particular, we assume that one who violates them is ki'ilu kofer b'chol ha-tarah kula. Okay, now we move a little bit further. The Avnei Nezer was one of the great Gedolim in the 1800s, wrote a sefer on Hilchos Shabbos that's referred to as the Eglei Tal. Am I speaking too quickly? Everything's fine. I have to make up for lost time. So, a little. Okay. So the Avnei Nezer, in his sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, called the Eglei Tal, writes the following. I'm going to read his work. Kishem sheshmirah Shabbos shkula k'chol ha-mitzvot. Just like the observance of Shabbos is considered in some way commensurate, it's considered equal to being observant of all the mitzvot, so too says the Avnei Nezer, lilmod ulalame b'hilchos Shabbos, if somebody spends time studying and mastering the laws of Shabbos, that is shakul k'lilmod ulalame b'chol ha-mitzvot. If you spend time making sure you know how to observe Shabbos, it is as if you spend time learning about all of the mitzvot HaTorah. That, says the Aben Ezer, is why it's important that we all do whatever we can to master the laws of Shabbos. And the Mishnah Berurah writes this in his introduction to Hilchos Shabbos as well, that it's impossible for a person who has not gone through Hilchos Shabbos and really tried to master it well, it's impossible for a person to observe Shabbos properly. Say, for example, the mashal that many of the Bali Musar give is, imagine somebody goes in the middle of a busy street and they decide to run across the highway with their eyes closed. Now, if it's during the day, you may have some very good mazel that a car will see you quickly, make a short stop, get out of the way, and you'll be able to keep running across. But the likelihood of that is pretty slim. More likely is, unfortunately, this person is going to get killed. Why? Because you can't just run into the street into a busy intersection without looking before you go. Imagine if you do it at night. Then there's no chance that a car is going to see you, and you're not wearing any reflectors or anything that will identify you. Of course a car is going to hit you, and there's no chance that you'll be okay. So how can a person go into Shabbos, which I would say is an extremely busy intersection? Every few minutes of Shabbos, there can be a car accident somewhere, so to speak. There can be something that will come my way that I'm going to be confronted with, and I'm not going to know how to handle properly. And if I'm not well-versed, how am I supposed to observe Shabbos correctly? It's impossible. The best case scenario is that I'm going into a street and the car is going to stop for me, and maybe somehow I won't be confronted with the issue. But the chances are, in a busy intersection, that there's going to be a car there and I'm going to get hit. So that's why we have to spend time making sure that we understand and that we know the laws of Shabbos. And sometimes it can be a little bit complicated, and sometimes it can be a little bit complex and very detail-oriented, but life is all about the details. Life is all about the details in everything we do, not just in religion, but in every relationship that we have. The details are really what matter. I just spoke about it over Shabbos in San Diego. You know, sometimes you can have a relationship that's been very healthy for years and years, and suddenly it seems, out of nowhere, it just begins to disintegrate. And you wonder, what happened? They had such a lovely relationship. This couple was getting along so well, or this siblings, or whatever. And everything can change because someone wasn't careful in the details of how they presented a question, how they presented a comment, how they said something. Everything can fall apart, which is why the Divna Magid explains, when the Navi in Eicha describes the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so he says, Tum'asa b'shulah, the contamination of the Jewish people was in the fringes. What does it mean in the fringes? Means they didn't wear tzitzis. What exactly is the fringes? So the answer, he explains, is as follows. The Masa B'Shulev is a reference to the following. He says, imagine, the Dibna Magad often told Meshalim to explain his point. He says, imagine you have somebody who's making an exquisite banquet in his house, and he's having all kinds of very beautiful company and a big suda, whatever it's for. You're celebrating something, and he goes to the fabric industry, and he says, you know, I'm going to need the most beautiful tablecloth you can sell me, because having this beautiful caterer come and everything's going to be taken care of, I need to make sure that the table is set nicely. So he's looking through and he finds a beautiful piece of fabric, and they tell him it's $250 a yard, it's going to be very expensive. Starts looking, okay, makes sense, this is what seems to be the best quality here, and he purchases it, goes out of the store, and as he's leaving, the owner of the store says to him, I just have an idea, I think when you get home you should take it to the seamstress and make sure that they sew up the edges. And he turns back to the person who sold it to him and he says, I don't understand. Are you telling me that this is not as high quality as I thought? And he says, it's a very high quality. Look how much money you just paid for it. But I'm just telling you, it's unfinished. So if you don't have the edges sewn up, the whole thing's going to fall apart. And he's back and forth. He's fighting with him. What do you mean? How could it be? I still have to do something more than what I just paid? That doesn't make sense to me. They're fighting. They're arguing back and forth. And he says, fine, don't listen to me. Goes home, puts it out on the table. He has a 4-year-old child that's sitting there at the banquet, doesn't know what to do with himself. He's bored. He's not following the conversation. And he's sitting at the edge. And what's he doing? He starts pulling at the string. And after he finishes pulling out half of the strands from the tablecloth, he goes to the other side. And he starts doing it to make it look even on both sides. And before you know it, the whole thing unravels and the whole thing disintegrates. The whole thing falls apart. How so? Because he didn't pay attention to the small fringes on the edge. Because he didn't pay attention to the details. And sometimes the details are what make the difference between the most beautiful fabric and an absolute disaster in a relationship or in anything else. I've had a number of times in my community, a high school kid will ask me, does God really mind the shkiyas in 10 minutes? Does he really care if I daven in 12 minutes from now? You're telling me he's not Kriya Shema at 9:11 this morning? God really cares if I daven and say Kriya Shema at 9:13? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Any of you ever have to compile a resume? I assume. There's an art in compiling a resume. And it's a difficult task to figure out how am I supposed to take everything I've done in my life and put it onto one piece of paper. And what's relevant to this job interview and what's not? And what's relevant to this camp that I want to apply to and what's not? What do they want to hear from me? What's going to turn them off? What's going to turn them on? What's going to make them interested? What's not? And it's hard to do all of that. Imagine if you were asked to make a resume for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for God himself. How impossible would that be? What would you write? Where would it end? Where would it start? So let's look in the Chumash. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say about himself? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam say about himself? Pasuk tells us in Sefer Dvarim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ohev Ger Lachis Lo Lechem V'Simla Osem Mishpat Yatom Ve'Amana. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays attention to the members of our community who seem to be underprivileged, to those who are often taken advantage of, to those who are often not treated fairly. To a Yatom Ve'Amana means to a widow or an orphan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes sure, God makes sure that He's going to look after those people. And Osem Mishpat Ger Lachis Lo Lechem V'Simla. God makes sure that the convert in the community who may be an outcast, who may not feel comfortable, who's not being taken care of, who doesn't have a place that's completely comfortable with where they should be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll take care of that person. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam is most proud of. Because details really, really matter. And details in every area of life really matter. Just in this past week's parsha, when we spoke about all of the makos and Yetzias Mitzrayim, so there, the Medrash has a fascinating comment. What in the end saved the lives of the Jewish people? What in the end saved their lives? What was it? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell them to do? What? Blood on the doorpost. Yeah, did I mark you here? I don't know, you can't. What is your name? Okay, welcome. Are you in the class? Or are you there? Okay, I'm sorry. If it's marked absent, just let me know. So, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say we should do? The Ribbono Shel Olam says you should put blood over the doorpost, and this is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the way God's going to know, so to speak, as if he needs the reminder, but this is the way he's going to know to skip over your home and not to involve you in Matzah Sukkot. Now, how did he tell us to do that? What needed to be used to put the blood over the doorpost? Anybody know? Okay, does anybody learn through the Parsha every week? Good idea. Good idea. Shnai Mikav Rechav Targum is a good idea. First of all, the Gemara says, it's a school of Arizas Yama. So, you know, you see all kinds of people doing all kinds of schools. Like today, how many of you said Parashat Haman? That's it. Right? So that's a school that's not quoted in Chazal. That's something that came along much later on. The school of saying Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum every week, which is a much larger commitment than saying Parashat Haman on Tuesday at Parashat Tshalach. But Parashat saying Shai Mikra V'Echad Targum, the Gemara says, is a skula for Arichas Yom HaMishan. So, that was a nice idea. Aside from that, the Parsha speaks to us every week. And it's something that's so relevant to our lives. And every time you go through Rashi and the Psukim, you come up with a new insight, you come up with a new idea. And it's something that always gives tremendous perspective. You know, just this year, I had an interesting Ha'ara that never came to me before. I'm going totally off. We started with Hilchos Shabbos. We'll get back to it in a minute. So, or maybe in a few. But, how many times have you read about Matas Choshech before, right? We're all of age. We've heard about it many times. Darkness in Egypt sounds terrible, sounds wonderful, whatever, whichever perspective you look at it. So what does the Torah say? That so long as Matas Choshech was going on, the Jewish people had light. Hayarva Moshe Vosav. We were not affected. We were not impacted by the terrible Matas. Yeah, but at the same time, we weren't yet free. We weren't yet B'nai Chorin. So you're stuck in the Mitzrayim. Very nice you have light, but you're still stuck there. You know what I took from this year for the first time? That freedom cannot be accomplished so long as other people are still sitting in the dark. Just because you have light doesn't mean you're at a stage of geula. I was thinking about it because tonight I have to speak for Eitan, which is an organization that helps couples struggling with infertility. So thinking about it, you know, some people live lives and very happy lives and everything seems to be going very well. And they say, you know, what could be better? The answer is, so long as there are other people who still live in darkness, you're not considered a redeemed people. You're not considered nigolim. There's something very lacking in your life and you have to appreciate that. How many times did I read the Parsha, Parsha's Bo? How many times did I experience Pesach and think about the Machos? I had never thought of this perspective. But, you know, there's always a new perspective. So reading the Parsha is very important. Back to this point. How were they told in Machos Becholos to spread the blood on top of their door? What were they told to do? Yeah? Azoth. What is an Azoth? A hyssop. What is a hyssop other than an art store word? A small blade of grass, that's it. A small blade of grass. Ezo. Writes the Medrash on this past week's Parsha. Ha Ezo nira la'adam she'eno klu. The blade of grass is totally insignificant to us. Who pays attention? How many times have you walked by a blade of grass, ripped it out of the ground, ripped the leaf off the tree, kicked it? Nobody cares. Nobody pays attention. It's whatever. It's a blade of grass. Ha Ezo nira la'adam she'eno klu. Says the Medrash, an age of a blade of grass seems totally insignificant to us. But the power of the blade of grass is so significant in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shai de Ezo shehu shafel shebi ilana, says the Medrash. The Ezo, which is the smallest of all the plantations, Galas Yisrael. That is what caused the redemption of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Without that, we never would have been redeemed. And therefore, when it comes to God's law, when it comes to what He looks at, Kaviyahu, it's really the details that do matter. It's all about the details. And I think it's important for us to think about not only in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's true when you go through Hilchos Shabbos, there are a lot of details, and sometimes it can get a little bit tedious and a little bit complicated, but details really matter in religion. Because details matter to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And the same should be not only for the way we interact with the Ribono Shel Olam, but in relationships as well. So often you can have a wonderful, wonderful relationship, and I'm telling you, maybe you haven't been involved in relationships that long, or maybe you haven't seen so much of adults in your community, but I have seen how relationships literally can disintegrate from somebody who says a comment that was taken in the wrong way, that just wasn't careful enough about how it was presented. Details really matter. The consequences of details can be the difference between something tremendously positive and something that can be extremely painful and very, very negative. So when we go through Hilchos Shabbos, it's something to pay attention to, and it's something for us to definitely highlight and make sure that we do our best to understand and master. Let us learn now a passage from Rav Shimshon Pinkus in the Sefer Nefesh Shimshon. Let's see what he writes. Echad mehayisodos hachashuvim v'yadasu. This is number L. One of the fundamental, most important ideas in Judaism is shehayom bo kokshim es HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shabbos kodesh. That the day in which we engage, the day in which we encounter and experience the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shabbos. And he says, as a result of that, we have to understand what is Shabbos all about in comparison or in contrast to the other Yamim Tovim, to the other festivals throughout the year. So let's see, the next line. L'chol moed, for each one of the Yom Tovim, yesh es ha'meimat shalo. Each one of the Yom Tovim has a focus, has a theme. Es ha'bitui ha'miyuchad lo, ha'hagdara shalo. So what does that mean? Pesach we refer to as zman chayrusenu. Pesach we celebrate the fact that we became a free people. Shavuot we celebrate the fact that it's zman matan Torah senu. Shavuot is the time when we were given the Torah. And we celebrate our relationship with the Torah. Rosh Hashanah, as we know, is Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaDin. Rosh Hashanah is the day when Kol Bayi Olam Yavru L'Chanecha Kibnei Maron, when everyone is judged and we're all passing before God in judgment. That's the focus, it's the theme of Rosh Hashanah. Shabbos Kodesh. So when you're trying to figure out what is the focal point, what is the theme of Shabbos? V'Hagdarat HaMuchleches, if you want to understand what is the overarching, dominating theme of Shabbos, it is the following. It is Yomo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is the day of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Shabbos hu milashon shvisa. Shabbos is obviously from the word shvisa, which means we rest. So what does that mean? Chazal omrim, Chazal tell us, kishanatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu et haTorah. When the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us the Torah, Tzipor lo tzavach, there were no birds that were chirping. Of lo parach, no birds were flying. Shor lo ga'a, which means the animals made no noise. Ofanim lo afu. Tzrafim lo amu kadosh kadosh. The angels were silent. Hayam lo nizdazea. The ocean stopped waving. Habriot lo dibru. Human beings weren't communicating with each other. Ela ha'olam shosek u'machrish. The entire world was silent. The entire world was still. The Yatzeh HaKol and HaKadosh Baruch Hu then declares, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So what does that mean? What is the significance of that perspective? Why was it necessary for everything in the world to come to a complete standstill, to a complete halt, in order to accept the Torah? So what would you say without looking? What would you say? What's the obvious understanding as to why that was necessary, why that was needed? Yeah? Yeah. I would say that we need to be able to pay attention. And the same way when you're in a library, it feels like this is not working. The same way when you're in a library and you expect that it should be quiet in there, otherwise you're not...
The earth is connected.
Otherwise you're not going to be able to pay attention. So too, the expectation was that at the time of Kabbalah HaTorah, so we needed quiet in the world in order to be able to experience what was actually happening, what was being communicated to us. And if we wouldn't have that ability to focus, we would not have fully appreciated everything that was being transmitted. That's the simple understanding. Let's read together. On a basic level, we understand that Hakol Hayashake, everything in the world was quiet. Because the world was silent, therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to then communicate the word, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Kolomar, as if to say, in order to be able to hear the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something needed to happen. We need no interruption. We need to be able to hear the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, with nothing getting in our way, with nothing being an obstruction in any way from our focus. But he says the truth is, that is really not what happened. That's not what happened. What really happened here was the following. Really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the master of the entire world and has the ability to always be heard. The problem is we are so distracted and busy, we do not pay attention, and therefore we do not see or experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Can I trouble you? That's it. That's what he says. Mashal amal davar. He gives an amazing mashal.
Oh, is
that what? No, it's a computer. So he gives the following mashal. Hayapan melach gadol v'nifla. There was once a prestigious, honorable, majestic king. Ve'echad min esinav huzman v'pigisha imo be'armona. And it was a very simple subject who was invited to the palace to come and have a discussion, to have a conversation with the king. Now, it was the first time this person's ever been in the palace. He's excited as can be, doesn't even know what to expect, and he's just beside himself with this opportunity. Ba'armona melucha. Of course, when one goes to a palace, you don't just walk into a room and go directly to the king. You go from one room to another room and you see all kinds of different things and you have many, many different elements and aspects to the palace. Now he writes as follows. Milvad ha-melech atmo. Aside from the meeting that's going to happen in the important room, nimtzayim anashim nosafim ha-mesharshim ha-melech. There are many advisors who assist and serve the king. Minadvim. They have pianists, they have musicians who are playing music. Chachamim, they have advisors who sit in their room, in their cabinet room. Yoatzim, they have cabinet members who come together, the Hinei. Magia ha'oreach, this guest comes on his invitation. He walks into the gate, into the entryway of the king. Miyad kishenichnas. Anyone here ever been to the White House? Yes. So, I think this is a great description. No, did you find that when you went to the White House, there's just a lot of things going on? Yeah. Oh, so it was quiet.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was in the White House for the Hanukkah party. And when you're in the White House for the Hanukkah party, this is exactly what's going on. There's so much happening. There's like a Navy band playing beautiful music. And it so happens that they're playing only Hanukkah songs, which is like even more interesting. And you can just sit there the whole night being totally enamored by the music. Then you go into another room and you see beautiful paintings. And there's the red room and the blue room and the green room and this room and the other room and the history. And you're reading everything and you're looking at everything. And he says, you can spend your entire time looking and listening to the symphony orchestra. And you can listen to these people who are gathering together to have their discussion off on the side. And you're eavesdropping to hear what are they talking about. And you're looking at this painting and that beautiful artistry and all of that. He has to pull himself away from the music. And then he sees that there's some advisor to the king, some minister who's giving a whole speech on the other side of the auditorium, who's giving a speech on the other side of the room. And he goes over there and he starts listening. And with all this and with all the paintings and all the beautiful artistry all over the place, he is so preoccupied that he doesn't even pay attention to the fact that there's one reason why he's there. He's not paying attention to the fact that you're here because the king wanted to have a conversation with you. It's not because he's disrespectful to the king, but rather because there's just so much going on, I can't even block this out to be able to focus on the reason why I'm here. Next paragraph. Be'ef Sharuso. Right? Yeah, Be'ef Sharuso. Lahavir shows hagabi shows. A person can go hours upon hours. Beklitas kalayofi shamisavit. Trying to take in all this beautiful, all these beautiful things around him, absorbing it all. Ula olam lo yiras yofiyam shohamelach atzmo. You may never actually pay attention to the majesty of the king himself. Avala melach ma'od nechaviv oso v'chapitz v'sochach imo. But the king wanted to have a discussion with you. That's why you're here. Ma'od nechaviv. So he's getting frustrated. His guest is not showing up. Where is he? Humachriz, he makes an announcement and he says, Kulam lios v'sheket. Everything that's going on in this palace needs to stop immediately. The band needs to stop playing. The advisors need to stop talking. The paintings need to be ripped off the wall. Everything needs to stop. And finally, at that moment, when all else was stripped away, you're able to appreciate the great majesty of the king himself. Olamenu, next paragraph, our world is Olam Nifla. We live in an unbelievable world. Melo kol ha'aretz kevodo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's presence, fills up the entire world. Yofyo shel habori yisbarach min malei kol ha'olam. The majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be felt all over the world. Adam nichnas le'olam uvamachom liris v'gabusa shel Hashem. When we come into this world in the place of being able to focus on the majesty of the king, who mislahed mikol ha'yofi shel ha'olam, we become overwhelmed and carried away with all the beautiful things that are ancillary to the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Me'achila v'hashfiyah. Ha'olam marchik osana me'Hashem yizbarach. Sometimes the world distances us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. While the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Hashamayim misapim kavod ha'keil, when I look at the sky, I see the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I go into a beautiful place in the world, I'm totally overwhelmed and I see the Ribono Shel Olam, the way it's supposed to be. But yet sometimes, we're so carried away with what we see that we don't make an effort to go one step back and say, how did this get here? And because of all that distraction, we can go an entire life without ever recognizing that the Ribono Shel Olam is the one who created all of this. V'shocheach es Hashem Yizbarach. And we forget the Ribono Shel Olam. He gives an example. He says, a person goes into a store, into a florist, and you see so many beautiful arrangements, did you ever say to yourself, wow, look at the amazingly beautiful world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created? I'll be honest, I've never had that feeling when I went into a forest, and I've been into it many times. But he's suggesting that all of that is making a distraction for us from the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is felt everywhere in the world. Yesh lo einayim, uroa olam nifla, aval hu niflai miyokli av shel ha'olam, and we get carried away with all these beautiful things. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Two last lines in this paragraph, lachein, kishaba HaKadosh Baruch Hu lafis at ha'Torah. When the Ribono shel Olam wanted to give us the Torah, and he wanted us to appreciate what it was about, hu hishvis es kol ha'olam, it was necessary to tell all of the distractions in the world to come to a standstill. Not because I want you to pay attention, and therefore I have to quiet everything down in order that I should be able to speak. No! I'm speaking all the time! HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always communicating with us, just we can't hear him. Why? Because we have so many other background noises that are getting in the way, and we're not able to focus properly. But the truth is, the essence is, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always talking, is always communicating with us. And sometimes we're just carried away with all the things in the way that don't allow us to hear him. Once everything quieted down, suddenly the voice and majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu became clear, became evident and obvious to all of us. That, he says, look at the next paragraph, Zuhi Shabbos Kodesh. That is what Shabbos is all about. Yom Shel Shvisa Mukhletes. It's a day when everything comes to a stop. Why? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu care if I do malacha? Why does it matter if there's a car driving on Shabbos? It bothers him? Well, why does anything matter? The answer is, bring your whole life to a standstill. Why? In order that you should be able to hear the resounding voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is always there in every moment of your life, just you don't have enough wherewithal to hear it. You don't have enough bandwidth to be able to focus on it. When you cut everything else out, you're then able to hear the clarity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice. Kalamahuma ha-shareret lo'olam mastika. All the noise and distraction he suggests, stop. During the week, we're all busy with things. However, on Shabbos, HaKol Mastik, HaKol Domain, everything is quiet. Why? In order that we should have the opportunity to appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. So Shabbos is an incredibly unique day. And it's meant to give all of us the opportunity to become reacquainted, not only with ourselves, but more importantly, with the Ribono Shel Olam himself. If you look here, Rabbi Yonasan Ibishitz, you can read it on your own. We don't have enough time to go through everything. But you can read that on your own. It's a beautiful paragraph. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has an amazing insight where he says the following. Even if you're a person who does observe Shabbos, you still need to make sure that you are mechazik yourself in the observance of Shabbos. Why? He gives a great example. His example is as follows. The Torah tells us there's a story of the Sota. The Sota means a woman who is unfaithful and her husband is accusing her of doing something wrong. So the Torah says she has to go to the Beit HaMikdash and they have to determine whether or not something happened or didn't happen. How are they supposed to determine? They didn't have video cameras, so how would they know? So the Torah describes an amazing, miraculous procedure. She used to drink something that had miraculous waters, and if she, in fact, was guilty of what she's being accused of, she would die on the spot in a very gruesome death. And if not, then it says that miracles happened to her and an amazing outcome. All great, fine. The Torah, however, puts that story of this, I don't mean great, terrible, horrific, but that's the story. The Torah says that story of the Sota right next to the story of the Nazir. What's the story of the Nazir? The story of the Nazir is a person who takes upon him or herself that they want to abstain from drinking wine. So the Torah gives all the permutations of how exactly to do that, what are the guidelines, what are the restrictions? Okay, very interesting story. Ask the Gemara, Lama Nitzlacha, Parsha Sota, Parsha Nazir. Why are these two stories next to each other? What is the connection in the story of Sota and the story of Nazir? So the Gemara tells us the connection is when somebody is being unfaithful, when somebody is doing something wrong. How does it get started? Not because they want to do something wrong. It gets started because maybe they drank a little too much, they're not being serious enough, they're not really realizing the consequences of their actions. They don't have a perfect judgment because of what they may have drank. And as a result of that, one thing led to the next, till we are in the place where we find ourselves now. That's the story of the Sogya. If you have a person, says the Gemara, who watches this whole procedure, and who sees what happens to this woman, and who is exposed to this terrible story, you have to have some kind of tangible takeaway from that story. It has to impact you in some way. You have to do something. It has to be an action item. What is that going to be? I'm going to take myself away from my relationship with alcohol in order to make sure that I stay very far away from anything that even comes remotely close to this terrible story that just unfolded with this woman. And that has to be a direct corollary to the outcome of the story. Says our Moshe Feinstein. If the Torah says, when I see something terrible happen, what do you mean? It has nothing to do with me. It's not me. I saw somebody else. It's not my spouse. It's not my family. I happened to be the Beis HaMikdash that day, and I experienced this terrible story, and I was exposed to something that happened. I didn't do anything wrong. I was just a bystander, innocent bystander. And yet, the Torah says, you were exposed. It means it's going to start watering you down. It means your values are going to start changing because of what you see. You have to go to the other extreme to make sure that you counterbalance that which you experience. Rav Moshe says, we live in a world, we're not in a shtetl anymore, where everybody keeps Shabbos, where nobody's driving in the streets, where everyone's doing everything to make sure that Shabbos is a sensitive time. We live in a world where everybody's doing everything, where we have integrated communities, where we have members of our own family who are not observing Shabbos. It happens all the time. And if that's the case, and we have people in high school keeping half Shabbos and using their phones on Shabbos and doing all kinds of things, I assume at this stage we've grown out of that. That's why I said high school. Right? So we have people doing all kinds of violations of Shabbos around the Sefer Moshe. If God expects us to have a takeaway message, when we see the Sota go through this tragic event, we have to do something to make sure that we are mechazik, that we strengthen our ability to stay away from that, then Sefer Moshe, what do we have to do about making sure that Shabbos remains strong? What do we have to do to make sure that Shabbos remains a focal point of our lives and that we have the proper perspective when we observe a Shabbos? And therefore he says, even if a person is religious, even if a person knows all the halachot and laws of Shabbos, we still have to do something to make sure that we try our best to encourage ourselves to appreciate and value what Shabbos really stands for. I think that's a very strong message and a very strong lesson. Let's read one final passage from Rav Shimshon Pinkus and then we'll end. Look on the other side of the page, where Rav Shimshon Pinkus writes the following. Also, beautiful insight. The Torah tells us about the story of the Mekoshe Sha'etim. What was the Mekoshe Sha'etim? He was a person, not exactly clear what he did wrong, but on face value it seems that he gathered wood on Shabbos, which is not permissible, put them into a pile. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure exactly what to do with him. Let's read the psukim together. The Jewish people are traveling in the Midbar, in the desert, and they see, they come across somebody who is gathering wood on Shabbos, which was not allowed. They put him in jail. Why? Why they put him in jail? Because nobody knew what the halacha was. What are we supposed to do? Do we kill him? He violated Shabbos. What's the halacha? So they go to Moshe, and they say, until Moshe tells us what to do, we're going to lock him up to make sure that we don't allow him to get away with his terrible, terrible mistake. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is not sure what to do. He presents the question to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God responds and he says, Mot Yumas HaIsh. This person needs to die. Ragom Osem Ba'avamin Kal Ha'idah Michutz L'Machaneh. We have to stone this person. And the whole community should be involved in this procedure. Everybody should come and get stoned, and they should destroy this person's life. And that's what they do. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe. That's what everybody does. Okay, let's read. The MS, next paragraph, Lepela HaDavah. This is shocking. Akama Echmira HaTorah Shmir Shabbat Kodesh. The Torah is so overwhelmingly extreme when it comes to someone who violates Shabbat. Mashalom atzinu kidigmato b'shum mitzvah Shabbatot. You don't find a parallel to this by any other area of halacha in the Torah. Haynu she'apu'ula kala shebekala. What exactly did this person do wrong?
What did he do? Ula kala shebekalas. He collected a couple of sticks and he put them in a pile. What are we talking about already? Sacha kol leso kama isim asada. And yet with that small action, that small activity, klarhanisha atorah ba'onesh hachama biyoter, the Torah says you deserve to be killed for that. Hare nisha yisrov sefer Torah rachmana l'slan. Somebody who takes brazenly a sefer Torah out of the Aron HaKodesh, out of the shul, brings it into the town square, burns it in front of everybody, in kol shemos HaKodesh Shabbo, with all the names of God that are listed in the sefer Torah, and with all the psukim and everything, and all of that terrible, defiant act represents, what would be your punishment? What would we do to such a person? Eino chayav nisa. He don't deserve the death penalty for that, which I would have said is the worst of the worst. How can he do such a thing? Or, for example, he says, Misha ochal chazir, someone who deliberately goes and eats non-kosher food and attempts his own nacho and destroys his insides by eating non-kosher food. What is his punishment? Not the same as one is Machal Shabbos. When it comes to violating Shabbos, not only do we give the death penalty, but also it's the most stringent of all the death penalties. It's the most severe. It's what we refer to as skila, which means you get stoned by the whole community. It's worse than if we would just give lethal injection. It's the worst of the worst. So why is that? Why is that? He explains, look at the next paragraph. Amnam mashalamad avadomit. Somebody who has a infection on their arm or leg. The doctors have determined that they have to do some kind of procedure in order to be able to help save this organ, to save this limb. They have to do something. Imagine if the doctor, when doing a procedure, yitev yinateach b'merchak 2 centimeter mimakam achetza. The doctor charted everything out, looks exactly at how they're supposed to do the procedure, and instead of taking a biopsy from here, they're 2 centimeters over and they take a biopsy from there. What will happen? Instead of removing this part of the skin, they decide to remove, mistakenly, 2 centimeters over on the arm. What will happen? What will happen? The infection won't be healed. The procedure was an abject failure. It didn't work. It was unsuccessful. And potentially, the person can lose function in that organ because you had a problem brewing. It should have been taken care of. Now, the problem is not properly taken care of because they were 2 centimeters off. Yachol is obviously that mum chamer ba'adam. It can cause a person a terrible, irreparable damage to their body. Imagine if somebody's having open heart surgery and they shard out exactly what they need to do, and instead of doing what they're supposed to do, they're 2 centimeters off, just a drop off, 2 centimeters off. When you come to sensitive parts of the body, the most important fundamental parts of ourselves, Shesham Mekar Achiyah, that's where the source of life comes from. Umishkan HaNefesh, if you have the smallest mistake when trying to administer this procedure, the person will die. It's fatal. Asiyu Lahavi Atam Yad Ason B'Nefesh. V'chein Hu Anin B'Shabbos Kodesh. Next paragraph he says, and this is what Shabbos is all about, Shehi HaLei V'Hamerkaz V'Chal HaKadushah. Shabbos is the heart and soul of the Jewish people. Shabbos is me'ein habrachos, hama'ayam, hamakar l'chol kedusha bracha. Shabbos is what brings us to everything. And therefore he says, if there's the slightest mistake on Shabbos, don't look at it and say, you know, you're going to the extreme. What did the person do already? All he did was gather a couple of sticks. All I did was touch my phone. All I did was flick on a light switch. Come on. You're going to give me the death penalty? You're going to say I'm going to be punished for that? How can it be so bad? The answer is, because when we're dealing with Shabbos, we're dealing with something that is the heart and soul of Jewish life. And when you're doing an open heart surgery, when you're doing, someone has a brain operation, a brain surgery, we know that the smallest mistake can have such fatal implications. And therefore, he writes, this is why the Torah says, as we started, Mumer the Shabbos is Mumer l'chol ha'Torah kula. If somebody is not careful about the laws of Shabbos, it's as if you missed everything because you're in an open heart surgery and you made a mistake, and one little mistake in that kind of atmosphere is fatal. And that is why he explains Shabbos is considered something that is in a league, in a category of its own, which is exactly why we need to make sure that we are well aware of what the laws of Shabbos actually are about. Because in the smallest way that a person can make a mistake, and of course we're all subject to making mistakes, but the only way to save ourselves from making a mistake is if we educate ourselves how not to make a mistake. Like the Mishnah Berurah says, if one is not educated, if one is not informed, there's no way you can possibly go through a Shabbos without doing something wrong. And therefore, we have the opportunity and we have the privilege over the next couple of weeks, Amirta Hashem, to do whatever we can. Obviously, Shabbos, Hilchos Shabbos are vast and very detailed, but we're going to try. We're going to try to get into whatever we can, which should be a foundation and a building block for everyone to then be propelled forward to want to do more on their own and to understand to the best of their ability what the laws of Shabbos mean to us in practical terms in today's generation, in today's understandings, with today's science, with today's technology, with everything that we interact with on a regular Shabbos. How are we to do it properly? How are we to make sure that Shabbos is the heart and soul of our lives? And how are we to make sure that on Shabbos we have the opportunity to make sure to quiet down all the other background noise and to once again have our ability to focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself?